Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to my slightly groggy brain as my Milwaukee Bucks won their first NBA championship since 1971. Back when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was still going by Lou Alcindor, or in my case, back when I was still watching Captain Kangaroo. And if you don't know who Captain Kangaroo is, you're officially a young person. Speaking of sports, the Olympics are now underway, and so are the politics. Apparently, the U.S. women's soccer team took a knee before their first game against Sweden. When this came up, I wondered, why are they playing the national anthem before an Olympic game? Well, apparently they take a knee without music. That somehow doesn't seem half as outrageous. It's definitely engaging in politics, or racial justice, as they put it. But it's still showy. Anyway, news is breaking that the International Olympic Committee and the Tokyo 2020 organizers have forbidden their social media teams from sharing any photos showing athletes taking the knee. Like, it's allowed, but we're not going to push it out there. Athletes are allowed to take a knee before play begins to highlight injustice. They can speak to the media and post online about their views or wear clothing with a protest slogan at a press conference. But here's what's banned. No political statements during events, during victory ceremonies, and at the Olympic Village. Well, the controversy here in our shop is whether all this kneeling causes you to stop rooting for the Americans. On the one side, our MRC culture folks tend to favor the side that if you think America's so evil, maybe you should just move to Sweden and play for them. Some tend to root for these teams to lose, even though they're Americans. Now look, the Swedes also kneeled before the game, so you're not really going to root for the Swedes. They're just as leftist as the Americans, if you're going to use political standards to decide which team you're going to root for. They're all kneeling. On the other side is the view that Americans should always root for Americans, that it seems anti-American to root for America to lose. Apparently, this kneeling is a regular feature of the National Women's Soccer League here in the States. Most of us aren't watching National Women's Soccer League games, just like most of us aren't watching the WNBA. I think these antics say something about who they think their audience is. They have a niche audience. They have a feminist audience. It is certainly a different crowd than, say, an NFL audience. And it's one thing to say, well, Colin Kaepernick did kneeling, so I'm going to root against the 49ers. Nobody has a problem with that. I think it becomes different when you somehow seem to be rooting against the United States. You're rooting against America. That can't be. Well, I think a lot of us on the conservative side just wish that you didn't always have to have this tendency to say, I have a platform. I need to use it for good, for progressivism. On this issue, I myself am a squishy Susan Collins-type centrist. I root for the Americans, but I'm not going to be too upset if Megan Rapinoe loses. I mean, after all, do you see those Subway commercials where the guy's just peacefully having a burger and she kicks her soccer ball into his sandwich and says, go get Subway? That's not a way to endear yourself. To go eat Subway after I knocked your burger you just paid for out of your hands. I don't know who thought that was a genius commercial. Look, in an international competition, if you're going to demonstrate that you're ashamed of your country, then maybe you should give that slot in the World Cup or in the Olympics to somebody else. And we'll see how NBC handles all of this. NBC will have a tendency, I think, to find a space to glorify protesters. But they have that same thing that they have to worry about losing audience because people don't like really nasty anti-American protest. Like, everybody can understand the idea that somehow you're thinking, I don't like police brutality. Well, nobody's going to kneel for black-on-black crime because that's just a right-wing talking point. What's funny to me about all of this is just imagine all these soccer players were kneeling in prayer to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Suddenly, that demonstration would be objectionable to the left. That's somehow a violation of church and state or something. Call the ACLU. You can't kneel for that. You have to kneel for secular justice. You can't kneel for Jesus. So we shall see how NBC in its regular broadcast and NBC in its news broadcast tries to cover progressivism and the Olympics. We have a thing up at Newsbusters now recalling all of the past liberal bias that surrounded coverage of the Olympics. You can get that at Newsbusters. We'll have more with Scott Whitlock after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
Welcome back to the Newsbusters podcast. With me now, Scott Whitlock, longtime news analyst, associate editor, started in 2005. That's old news now.
Yeah.
I was doing that with Kyle Drennan the other day. If you were here for Barack Obama's first campaign, you've been here a while. The Texas Democrats were celebrated by the networks as a glorious civil rights crusade. And then came the bad news. Five of them became COVID positive. Six now, you said.
Yep.
Scott did an item on this on Monday because everybody on the weekend was sort of tweeting, yeah, here's a story they're not going to be interested in doing. Heroic Democrats get COVID. So the story from Saturday to Monday amounted to a scant 35 seconds on the ABC and morning and evening newscasts. And that was the leader. 20 seconds for NBC and a meager 12 seconds on CBS. The reporting all had a no big deal tone on Monday as the total of COVID plus Texas Democrats rose from 3 to 5. Only NBC's Today bothered to mention it. But then the fun note, Scott noted, on Sunday night, the CBS Weekend News did a whole story on the Texas Democrats and never mentioned the COVID.
Right. Yeah, it just shows you that what is good news or for the Democrats, that's the news angle that the media wants to follow. And it's just absolutely true. We don't even have to imagine. We know how this would be covered if this were Donald Trump or if this were Republicans. And one could say that it's not super spreader because it's only six. But look, they're infecting high level people, government officials now. You have Pelosi's office, you have people in the White House. This is not good, but it's being covered as really almost kind of an aside that, oh, and you know, in these larger stories about COVID, oh, and by the way, the Texas Democrats are infecting people.
Yeah. Well, yes, we all understand that the Democrats have always tried to parade around like they care more about COVID than the Republicans do, that the Republicans, they're going to pretend the Republicans are all vaccine skeptics and social distancing haters and mask haters and all of these things, no matter how well the Republicans behaved or how often they spoke in favor of vaccines. This is all a case of then turning the story around, is that the Texas Democrats came to Washington on a private plane taking a picture where nobody's wearing a mask. If they had flown commercial, they would have had to wear a mask. So the idea that when they suddenly are all infected with COVID, even if they're vaccinated, it at least has a ha-ha quality to it. And that's, again, the liberal media are going to say, we're not interested in ha-has against the Democrats. So then we get the story that we have more infections, a Nancy Pelosi staffer and a Biden White House staffer. So the question then becomes, did the Texas Democrats, were they responsible for that?
Well, again, this all sort of comes back to the whole idea of them not wanting to speak truth to power, because we don't know. But you could certainly speculate. You could certainly go and interview and ask questions and find out more about this. But as you said, they don't want to do this because it sure looks bad for the Democrats. And it takes their pre-written, ready-to-go narrative of these heroic Democrats singing "We Shall Overcome."
Badly,
and turns it into this event where, as our colleague Kyle Drennan said, can you imagine Republicans fleeing one state and going all the way to Washington, D.C., spreading COVID along the way? It's just, it's astonishing that they don't care and they don't really want to question it.
If it was Texas Republicans flying into Biden's Washington, spreading the COVID, yeah, I think we can all guess. That's why we were like, hey, let's try to look at this. How many seconds did they give this? Because I think we all know it in our bones. That's why we have our SnapStream recording system that we can then get in there and try to figure it out. And it was, yeah, this was minimal. I mean, this was almost zero. Curtis Houck reported on Tuesday night that ABC mentioned the infections for this Pelosi staffer and the White House staffer, but never mentioned the Texas Democrats, you know, starting this. The other angle I didn't see much on was that Kamala Harris suddenly reported on Sunday morning to Walter Reed Hospital for a routine visit. And we didn't really get anything more from that. We have to assume that she was probably getting a COVID test.
Yeah, this is Democracy Dies in Darkness. It doesn't seem to be doing too well when you have journalists who don't really want to look deeply into these questions because they're Democrats. And, well, now I guess everything's fine that Joe Biden is president.
And Curtis also reported, you know, Peter Ducey from Fox was asking about this to Jen Psaki at the White House in his usual way. He did sort of throw that mini note of snark in there saying, is this a super spreader event? And the reason he would do that is, yes, the news media presented anything like this. Anytime Republicans gathered, it was a super spreader event. I think we all remember the Donald Trump rallies he attempted to have, including the one Herman Cain went to, if we'll remember. And then we even have the notion when President Trump came back from the hospital after his bout with COVID, he took his mask off outside on the steps, and they all treated that like a super spreader event. So I think that, you know, the question's a decent question, and it was asked in a decent way, but that's the way this whole issue is going to be seen. It's a, well, this is a Fox News story, which means that's not news, that's advertising. Well, of course, we'll turn around and say, that's really the way we feel about a lot of the news. This whole Texas Democrat stunt can be defined as not news. Well, we want to get them to pass the For the People Act. That's not happening. It's literally not going to happen. So what you're doing is pointless.
Right. They view Peter Ducey and Fox News as, oh, they're just trolling. Look at the questions they ask. But it reflects so much more on the rest of the media, because all those other journalists, or most of those other journalists in that room, don't ask those questions. And you ask, why don't they? Why aren't they interested?
Yeah, and you don't have to be obnoxious about it to ask the question. I don't think Peter Ducey asked, you know, is why did the vice president go to Walter Reed? These things are not—they're not obnoxious questions like why is America dying, Mr. Trump? You know, I mean, kind of right. Questions. I think that's what I like, is that these questions are asked respectfully. When I was in the White House reporting corps, that you ask the question respectfully because you're not there to make a show of yourself. Well, some of them were, right? Speaking of star journalists, you also noted Nicole Hannah-Jones was on the CBS This Morning Saturday show. Not a show lots of people watch, but we still record it. Mm-hmm. Michelle Miller, one of the co-hosts, mentioned talk to her. She never mentioned all the problems that Hannah Jones had with the 1619 project, just starting with the obvious, which is she somehow suggested all of the founders were interested in maintaining slavery. That's why they did all this Declaration of Independence stuff in the Constitution. They had to walk that one back, but it never comes up. So Michelle Miller's question was, can you be a journalist and an activist today? Of course, Hannah Jones said yes.
All journalism is activism. When you look at the motto of the Washington Post, right, democracy dies in darkness, that's not a neutral position, but our methods of reporting have to be objective. We have to try to be fair and accurate. And I don't know how you can be fair and accurate if you pretend publicly that you have no feelings about something that you clearly do.
This is the part that kills me. I'm sure that you have the same reaction, which is, I think that was your reaction. Oh, we need to be fair and accurate and biased. Well, no, if you can have a viewpoint and still be accurate, that's the whole problem with her. She wasn't fair or accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, if you just take those words at face value, I think there would be a lot of conservatives who go, okay, I can agree with that, because I think there's plenty of good opinion journalism. National Review has great journalism, and those writers are conservative. But to your point, that's not what she was doing. She wasn't being fair and saying, look, I'm coming from a perspective, but let me really try and be fair. And one of the things I pointed out in that article, this is the third time in July that CBS has either interviewed Hannah Nicole Jones or just had someone do a story about her. And in all of these stories, they either gave scant mention of the problems of 1619 Project, or they completely ignore it. And one of the things I pointed out a few times is that the people who were really objecting to 1619 Project at the time when this was all coming out, and to this day, a lot of them are not conservative. Sean Willens, a historian, not a conservative.
Right.
He's a liberal, but he was saying in very tough terms at the time that there are serious historical problems in this, and other historians did the same. There was the name escapes me, but one of the historians in Politico wrote a piece saying, I told them at the time that this has riddled with errors. They knew that, and the New York Times, and they didn't care about that. So
yeah.
That's kind of one of the big problems with all this push that CBS, and CBS isn't alone, but this woman, is that there were huge errors in there, and non-conservatives are saying that they were willful, intentional errors.
Right. So the historians objected, and then, of course, they're going to put her into Howard University as a professor, you know. But the funniest part about all of this is you go back to the New York Times and their pompous advertisements. The truth is more important now than ever. No, obviously it wasn't to you. And that is what the 1619 Project showed, which was truth isn't that important. We have a narrative we want to push, and we're going to override anybody who says that we don't have the facts straight because we feel good about this. It makes us feel good about ourselves. And I would say this, I know that on this latest appearance, and probably in her previous appearances, what words go under Nicole Hannah Jones on screen? Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist.
Right.
So, and the weird thing about that, of course, was she didn't win for reporting. She won for commentary. She won for opinion writing, and that... It's absolutely anybody who read the piece that she wrote for the New York Times Magazine would be under no illusion that that was something you'd call straight news. It does underline the point is, yes, there is such a thing as good opinion journalism. The problem we have here at Newsbusters, and have always had, is that the New York Times takes its branding as a hard news outlet. CBS or ABC or NBC take their branding. They call themselves the mainstream, when they're absolutely not the mainstream, and they present themselves as hard news when they're obviously not hard news.
Right. And just one of the big problems of the 1619 Project is, look, they're pretty clear. She's pretty clear that this is an attempt to reframe the founding of this country and to put the focus on how awful America was. If you read the 1619 Project, they talk about capitalism and its connection to slavery. It initially said that the the founding was almost entirely because of slavery. So they're not in any way subtle about this. But CBS, in one of their July stories, I believe the second one, said that that this was only something that Republicans were objecting to, that you're kind of a kook if you think that there's some sort of a strong agenda coming from the 1619 Project in the New York Times.
Yeah, that's, again, it's somebody, you can only get away with that if you haven't read it. I mean, they even said sugar was the white gold of slavery, so no sugar, people. I mean, it was trumped up activism masquerading as journalism. Speaking of trumped up, we had an item here on PBS. He's now the PBS omnipresence. I used to call Bill Moyers the PBS omnipresence because he seemed like he always had some pompous series or another. Ken Burns, I guess, has a new thing coming out, so he's doing this round of interviews. A lot of times the documentaries are, you know, I did a documentary on New York. I did a documentary about baseball.
He did one on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a disaster. You know, I mean, it's not like those are all controversial topics. But he does tend to come on shows and just pull this pompous leftist routine. That's the Ken Burns I don't like, the one that does these TED Talk type lectures. And in this case, he went on the Brian Williams show complaining about lying and misinformation.
We're at this desperate place, the convergence of all those viruses, the side effects of the misinformation and the paranoia and the lying, voter suppression, and then the rewriting of our history, our saying that we're not interested in facts, we're not interested in the truth, we're not interested in the many varied voices that make us up.
So the first joke is, you're going to complain to Brian Williams about lying? Is that, you know which show you're on, right?
I actually wrote down a few words. Just he used phrases like misinformation, lying, not interested in facts, which, again, is hilarious when you're talking about Brian Williams.
Well,
talking to Brian Williams.
Yes, and I think that liberals have this arrogance, which is, they're interested in the facts. They're interested in the truth. Conservatives are not. And maybe we can blame Trump for some of that, because obviously he wasn't exactly Mr. Careful when it came to the facts. But it's also about how carefully you arrange your facts. I have facts I like, which we've been discussing in the show. I have facts I like. I have facts which are not helpful to me. And those facts are not really facts. So, you know, Ken Burns comes on this show and he goes on this bender about basically about critical race theory.
You think of so much of this Soviet-style disinformation and changing of policies is issuing from Texas, whose religion is, as we know, football. On a Friday night or a Saturday night after a trouncing, the coach comes out and says, you know, we didn't do anything right. We're terrible on defense, on offense, on special teams. You're telling it like it was. And somehow we're now certain that our children can't stand anything but a sanitized Madison Avenue version of our history, when in fact we're enriched by the variety and that complexity and the undertow.
Okay. I'm sorry. We understand Texas loves their football. I get that. But if you're a Christian in Texas, that kind of rubs you the wrong way.
Right.
Like, okay, excuse me, Mr. Quaker from New Hampshire with the mop hair. But that was the weirdest thing. If you haven't seen this interview, Ken Burns has this like poofy hair, looks very nicely styled. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, does he have a new girlfriend? Because that is not the hair we know. The guy's got this, you know, Beatles mop top from 1962. What's the,
I didn't recognize him at first. Yeah.
But he's trying to, this is the line that gets me. And that's that he said, oh, basically the conservatives believe our children can't stand anything but a sanitized Madison Avenue version of our history. Is that what you got in high school, Mr. Whitlock?
No.
Sanitized Madison Avenue?
No. I mean, we talked about slavery. We talked about it as kind of the overriding cause of the Civil War. So this idea that we didn't talk about it, we don't talk about it, I think is not just not true. It's whether or not, just going back to 1619 Project and things like that, you're going to come from the perspective that almost everything America does is bad, that slavery infects everything. And that is where I think a lot of conservatives and independents do get upset, because it's the idea that you're just trying to say that everything about America is awful. And for him, he made the Civil War documentary. I looked it up. It was 11 hours and 30 minutes.
It even had George Will in it.
So to pretend that we are somehow in a more perilous time for the Republic now,
yes,
than then, he of all people should know better.
Yeah, this is, yeah, it's like, Biden's president. Why are you that panicky? And that's where you go back to the riots and so on. But I think they've just so dramatically exaggerated that horrible day, where it's worse than 9/11, it's worse than the Civil War. It's like, we're more fraught now than ever. And they do a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think to me, it just comes across as emotionally freaked out and not based in facts. You can't possibly say we are more divided now than we were in the Civil War. Fact check, pants on fire.
Yeah, where's the fact check for that?
No, they never fact check liberal opinions, because liberal opinions are as good as facts. We should mention at this part of the show, Scott Whitlock does take this personally, since he went to George Mason University. George Mason, one of the founders.
That's right.
So, come on. They're not all terrible people.
Well, yeah. Or just, you know, if you, I just always say about things like that, you need to look at them in their full context. And so when we salute Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, no American is looking at him and saying we love them or we think that they did great things because of slavery. That was obviously terrible. When we look at Jefferson, we're looking at him as the third president, the man who wrote the Declaration of Independence, a founding father. So yes, by all means, look at them in their full context, positive and negative, but don't just look at them as completely evil and not consider the positives that they put forward for our country.
Well, I think that what I think all conservatives can smell in this, and the whole smell of the critical race theory, is it is basically meant to smear the founding. Nicole Hannah Jones wants to smear the founding. She wants to, you know, delegitimize the founding. That's why she wants to define the founding of the country as the first slaves arriving, because somehow slavery still characterizes America in 2021. That's what people object to. Like, we've made zero progress. That's where people get angry. That's where parents go marching down to the school board meeting.
Right.
America is a terrible place right now, and we need to teach your white kids that they have privilege and need to confess their sins right from the day they arrive in kindergarten. I should mention, Scott and I discussed this, and he has to remind me that I probably have more of an animus against Ken Burns than the average person. Back in 1999, my one time I testified before the House about public broadcasting, which I'm still grateful they actually allowed us in to make our pitch about what's wrong with public broadcasting. And I was on the panel with Ken Burns. There were two people in between us, so it wasn't like I was going to take a swing. But he was just so incredibly pompous that day. I mean, his whole testimony was like, and I had a viewer that wrote me and said that your baseball documentary was life-saving. You know, I mean, it's just, stop with it. Stop. You know, and even the Republicans, Steve Largent accepted, you know, treated him like he was this great eminent. So, you know, he is a great Democrat. That's what he is. He's a partisan through and through. As P.J. Gladnick noted, he gave a speech called Why I'm a Yellow Dog Democrat. That's how you ensconce yourself at PBS.
Right.
So if you actually care about PBS, because lots of conservatives are like, Tim, I don't watch PBS. The minute the pledge drive starts, I'm out of there. We only watched Lawrence Welk and
Downey Abbey.
College wrestling. And yeah. Look, in the Midwest, there's a lot of stuff on the public broadcasting stations that they want. College wrestling, people love that stuff. You can watch college hockey, Wisconsin Badger hockey. At least you used to watch Badger hockey on the PBS station. Those guys know how to get the pledge drives clicking.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't care about PBS and NPR or want to learn more, that's what we do here at NewsBusters. Come get a look once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for popping in.